We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're back after the international break, and we're back with a bang, and I'm joined by my regulars. I've got Neil Shaw with me. How are you, Neil?
Top of the league, son. Top of the league.
And, top of the league.
Hopefully our old boss, Unai, does us a favour today and just keeps them where they need to be.
Yeah, you never know with Unai away from home. We've all experienced it, but we'll be backing him. And I'm also joined by James Johnson. How are you, James?
Yeah. You can't complain when you're top of the league, can you? So
you can't.
Let's keep going.
And we haven't clicked into gear yet.
And it's for at least a week, so we get to enjoy.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, we had a long part of that last season. I don't think we're getting carried away, especially after last season. You know, last season it was almost like riding the crest of the wave at this point. I think we're all very, very aware of what Man City are to deal with, plus other teams like Liverpool. And we did going into this game, Neil, just before we talk about the game itself, we've got to talk about the top 13 games in, 30 points, least conceded in the league, least expected goals conceded in the league, played some big teams in there. Second game in the whole league of 13 games that our front four started together. It's a massive weekend for Arsenal. We said it was going to be a massive weekend. It was a massive weekend. It was, no matter what happens now this weekend, it's been a brilliant weekend for Arsenal. The result in the earlier game was exactly what we wanted, really. And it sounded a bit of a relatively drab affair for a 1-1 between those two teams who usually put on a pretty good spectacle. So we love all that, other than a couple of red cards.
Jack, sorry, you know, you're saying it's drab, but this is the best rivalry in the history of the Premier League, mate. How can it be drab when Man City, Liverpool, and Klopp Guardiola is the biggest in the history of the Prem? This is the biggest thing, Jack. How's it drab?
People that haven't watched the Prem clearly in the past, haven't they? They were blowing kisses to each other during the game.
It's like Neil says, it's that typical, it's two Northern teams, so it's better than every, you know. It's that Northern bias of all the journos and the pundits slowly creeping in.
Exactly. All the refs are in on it. We know that much. They couldn't work out who to favour, could they, in the game? You saw it. They were going, I'll give that one to Alisson. Didn't know what to do. Why can't Arsenal be playing just so I can rule it out? We all know. We'll get to the VAR decision. We're going to try and briefly brush over it because I did think it was going to be a long conversation over VAR and other things. Maybe we can talk about what we would have felt if it had been nil-nil, but it wasn't. Neil, the feeling, what's the feeling you got at the end of that game? You know, big relief. It's not an easy place to go to Brentford. I think they've lost three in the last year or so at home, two of them to us. They lost to Everton earlier in the season, but that was a real outlier. They give everyone a game there, to be fair. So it's a great result, Neil, not a great performance, which we'll get into, but we've got to give us some praise here, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. We are we're riding that stranger path than we were last season, where we're doing it in a very different way. I feel this season we're not that potent force up front, certainly, and even creativity wise, we're not playing fluent flying football, and yet we are still in exactly the same position we were this time last year, which is amazing. It feels great. I think it's the first time or first weekend that we've actually finished top this season, whereas last season we were right there from day one, literally, weren't we? We're just there for the whole of the season up until the very end. So it's different. We are defensively improved and offensively slightly, you know, I wouldn't say worse, but, you know, not as potent. There was a great stat. I think you put it on for Jack, didn't you, James? But there was a great stat that when I was watching Match of the Day, they said the top half was showing the comparison between this season and last season. with the goals that we're scoring and all the all stats that relate to it, and then the defensive stuff, and everything was almost reversed. It was almost reversed where we've declined in the shooting and the forward play. We've improved in the defensive. And I think I said it on the last pod, if only we can get both right, we're going to win it. We're going to be unstoppable. You know, Man City wouldn't know what's hit them. You know, that will show them how to play football properly without a cyborg in their midst. You know, so I think it's an amazingly important result because it shows that when we're not playing great, and it's the old adage, the champions, when they have a bad game, they still manage to eke out a result, you know, hook or crook. And, you know, they do it, or sometimes they do it right at the end of the match. You know, the last couple of minutes, they'll manage to get that goal, that all-important goal. It's not just about 3 points. It's what it means to the players. They're working hard, trying to do what they can against a very difficult team. Not many teams go there and get a result. I think their home record is, yeah, as you said just a few minutes ago, it's quite good for a team that, you know, it's not a top six team, is it? They're very, very hard to beat. The manager sets them up very well. Again, I think very much like what Newcastle did to us with nullifying our wingers, they did the same thing. So, you know, to go there, to go away in an oppressive stadium, which we felt 2 seasons ago, they absolutely destroyed us. We made amends last season, yes, but it felt more like the 2 seasons ago match for me. And I thought, are they going to get one over us again? But, you know, we did so well. And I think this is what it is. I remember the George Graham days. I know Jack loves hearing this, but he created a team defense first. And that is exactly what I felt this season is all about. It's more about our defense. So I'm just going to shout out very quickly, our 2 centre-backs, again, I'll say it, are insane, brilliant. You know, you can talk about Zinchenko almost potentially having a man of the match performance. Rice, unbelievable as always. But I think our 2 centre-backs deserve a shout because they have made a massive difference this season, apart from obviously the first few games where Gabriel was pushed aside for our experiment. But since they've been together, when one doesn't make a mistake, the other one's there to step up. Love it. I think it's a massive win, and I think it's going to... And it's also one thing also noted, we don't do so well after an international break, do we? And again, it was going to prove a point, again, that same point yesterday, but no, we managed to come through it. Massive.
Yeah. No, absolutely agree. I agree on the defensive partnership. It's all about partnerships, isn't it? I mean, you saw it in the international break, you know, Saliba not even sometimes starting for France, and you're going, hey, brilliant, fantastic. Deschamps hasn't got a clue what he's doing. And then you see people arguing about Gabriel, and I'm like, you can say what you like about him because I know what he does in an Arsenal shirt, and that's all that matters. James, 200 games in for Mikel Arteta, more wins in that time than George Graham and Arsene Wenger, you know, as well as deserving the praise of the team. But We're doing some really good stuff here. I mean, we're not clicking yet fully. Your data that you posted from Match of the Day and that Neil spoke about proved it. We're not as potent, but the amount of players we've had out and the amount of change in the lineup we've had, I don't think he's fielded the same team twice, really. We deserve some credit, even though it's at this early stage once again, but following on from last season, which we had a huge progression in as well.
Yeah, it's, again, I agree wholeheartedly with what we, you know, I don't want to, you know, you could put a cassette in of the podcast that we did last time together and press play on it because it's the same thought. I prefer the fact that when, again, yeah, I'd rather us be more free flowing and, you know, I'd rather be winning 5-6-0 than 1-0 every week. However, a win's a win regardless of how you get it and how you do it. But for me, I think last season we were so good and we just went run and run. And then obviously with the injuries as well, we faded away. And I would prefer that we, you know, don't go as gung-ho as we did. And then towards the end of it, we're much more well-equipped in the running. And again, I speak to Neil as well. Last year when Saliba and Tomiyasu went down, mainly Saliba, Do you remember, Neil, the flack that we got online because people were going, oh my God, the way you two are going on, it's not just one player. And I was like, well, for us, it bloody is. It bloody is.
Oh, and, like, that... and for a lot of teams, look at Rodri and City,
yeah.
You know.
Yes, exactly. Teams, exactly. Yeah. But I'm like, for that age and the caliber of player that he is and what he does, I mean, I know a lot of us do not like Rio Ferdinand. I know a lot of people cannot abide him. But as a pundit of looking at defenders, begrudgingly, I have to say he's one of the best centre-backs that I ever saw. And he sits there every week and goes, oh, for God's sake, this kid. Like this, he's like, look, he done it yesterday. There was a bit in the second half where he caught someone up, tackled him, and then it was like he was being pressed, and he had like, you were like, where's he going to go? And you were like, he can't dribble out of that. There's not a sideways on, but he managed to take it round one of them and then just ping it long to, I think it was Saka or Odegaard. And it's like, how does he know? It's like, he's just on the ball, off the ball. He gives people head starts and then catches up with them and kicks them, or, you know, gets the ball back. And this is what you want. I mean, Rice as well, so defensively sound, but he carries. You don't, you know, as much as we all lauded Thomas Partey last season, and he was fantastic. Yeah, you got some of the flash passing and some of the end, but he can't carry a ball like Declan Rice can. Declan Rice is so good at the defensive game, but also when he needs to put his burners on and he needs to play as well, he does it. And this is what the difference for me is that you've got a more solid unit, and as much as the attack can win your games, you know, it's all cliches, as much as attack can win your games, you did, like Neil again, your defence is going to win you the titles. And I think defensively, we look so much better than we did last season. And for me, Jack, I said to me that Zinchenko was my man. I know Rice got it, but I thought Zinchenko was fantastic, not just even from what he does offensively. I thought defensively he was good. And I attribute a lot of that to how well Tomiyasu's played this season, and the fact that I know Timber apparently could be out for the season now because they've said that Summit's flagged up and it wasn't as, you know, his progress wasn't as good as they expected because Summit else is flagged up now. But I do believe the way that Tomiyasu's come back and has kicked on, Zinchenko's like, oh bugger, I better butt my ideas up because I'm losing a lot of games. You know, I can take one or two games not playing, but I'm getting left out quite a bit for how well that he's doing. And I just, again, you talk about the importance of it and how good it feels. Yeah, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. The defence deserves so much credit. And I think Zinchenko's been really good since he's come back into the side as well. And that's what you need. You need that competition there. You don't want that might lead us to start to talk about, you know, our wingers a little bit and how, you know, they are fantastic, but there's not really anyone that's really pushing them to keep their place. Like almost every week, you know, Martinelli and Saka are going to start if they're fit. And that's great in a way, but it'd be nice to have maybe one player. Trossard's fantastic, but I still feel he's better on the interior, as we saw in this game where he started in the eight. But the lack of potency, I mean, we basically in this game put our best attacking lineup out, if you like, in a way. Neil, when you mentioned it about potency in the attack, but this is only our second game that the front four have really started together. So it's going to need some, I know they're used to each other, but still going to need some time to click. Worried at all that it's not clicking? Sometimes when I watch this game again, it mimicked a large part of the season where I felt we struggled to break down deep blocks. We looked a bit one-dimensional in the way we were attacking. It all looked a bit structured, a bit training ground style, no chaos to throw them off a little bit. And it felt a little bit easy to defend for long periods. And we have seen that against deep blocks, but we do know that teams go deeper against us than any other team. I just wonder if you're worried, Neil, or if you feel as the players are coming back, our fluency will come back.
No, I'm not worried. It's difficult to be otherwise because the table doesn't lie. Yes, if you do a direct comparison to last season, there is obviously a decline or a fall from that potency. But I'm not worried because I think when we play teams which are more free-flowing, that's when our attack and our creativity will come out just naturally anyway. I think they'll be given the freedom to move and do what they do a lot better than when you're against teams which had just set out deliberately to nullify the attack. As I said earlier, Newcastle did it, absolutely stopped the two best wingers in the league. And I think Brentford did a bit of that yesterday. And you've got to give them credit. You know, they worked hard to be able to do that, to set themselves up in a way to stop two players which are quick and very, very dangerous. It's not pleasing to the eye, of course it's not. And it doesn't give us Arsenal fans any kind of relief, or they just increase our anxieties, as you know, Arsenal fans are known to be anxious anyway, but it makes it worse, 10 times worse. But I'm not worried, no, because I know that this team can step up about 3 or 4 gears if they wanted to, attack-wise. I think the only time that I was not worried, but I was a bit angry, was the game against Chelsea, where we could have played a lot better in that way, and because we showed it in the last 15 minutes. And we only seemed to turn it on in the last 15 minutes. Whereas I think the difference between that game and the Newcastle and the Brentford game is Brentford actually did work hard to stop that creativity and stop those fluid runs. So I'm not worried, guys. You two might have a different take. I think that, you know, Saka probably isn't, for example, he isn't the machine he was last season, but you still see him do silly things. I mean, look at that pass yesterday. I mean, it's one of the best you can get, you know, on a plate, perfect. Things like that. He will always get the numbers in, no matter what, no matter how much I scream for him to be rested, how much I scream for him to take some time out. He doesn't. And you might not think that, or you think that he's not playing anywhere near the guy that he was last season, but I know that it's going to come back. I know in all these players it's going to come back. And as James said earlier, and as I've said right at the start of the season, when we was kind of stuttering a little bit in our fluency, it's better to be like this now and pace it, and then we hit those highs when we really need to in the last 10 weeks of the season, or, you know, last 10 games of the season. Not worried, guys. I'm not anyway.
Yeah. If you look at City's wins of their titles, they notoriously do not start well. But like Neil said, when it's last 11 or 10 games of the season, they go out and you get players that go absolutely mental for them. How many times, especially the last 2 years, Gundogan in the last 10 games becomes super? Do you remember, like, Haaland fell off a bit last year after, and then Gundogan just come out of nowhere and was, they were winning like we did yesterday. They were winning games like 2-1 or 1-0, very narrow, but they get the job done because a certain player just steps it up. And yeah, that's what I'm thinking and agreeing with Neil there with. So I've got no problem with that whatsoever. And I do agree as well, to give Brentford a bit of credit, because like Newcastle, annoyingly, they know how good Martinelli and Saka are, but they're like, if we keep them that wide and don't let them cut in, they can't do anything. And I think a lot of teams are going to try and do that. So it's, again, having somebody, hopefully, you know, I thought Jesus yesterday, I thought he was a bit wasteful, Jack. I thought his header, he should have scored. And then there was another
main
one.
Issue with that moment, wasn't it, really? We can look at the VAR all the time, not to push on, but that is the main issue with that moment. That's a terrible header. Scored one there last year that was hard.
Exactly.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah. And then he had the other one as well, where he just completely scot. You know, again, it was very the situation, and I know he can do it. That's the thing. Very reminiscent of, you know, we were talking about it, the Leeds game last season, that Saka goal, where he was just at that angle, but rifle it and everything. He just absolutely snatched at that chance. And I'm like, I don't know if he didn't think he had enough time or what have you, but he should have been smacking that into the top corner, into the net as well. Like, for me, that was just two chances that were incredibly wasteful. And I can't, you know, for me as well, Nketiah isn't against blame. I thought he was absolutely terrible when he come on, and then that at the end, I mean, he's only ever got one assist in the Premier League, so I can't really
I don't want to push on, but he's not a great sub, to be honest, Eddie. He's never really been a great sub. He's always been better when he started games. I think the data bears that out too. Most of his goals come, I know he did against Fulham earlier in the season, but that was actually a bit of an outlier. Most of his goals come from moments where he starts games. But he actually doesn't impact games very well, which is why I'm never that excited by his sub. I'm starting a game, I always think, oh, if he gets an early goal, we might be all right here or something. But that's slightly the issue with that. But I agree with you on Jesus. I thought it was a bit odd that we started him after not playing for about 4 weeks, played 96 minutes for Brazil, who wanted to do their own fitness tests on him, and then decided to play him for 96 minutes when, let's be honest, they barely started him ahead of people like Richarlison before this. So, of course, they want to play him 96 minutes just as he's come back from injury. But then we start him after about 48 hours of rest for the next game. We're not, I saw the lineup. I was excited, but I did think, a little bit worried about Jesus's return because, you know, he has picked up a lot of niggling injuries, you know, so you've got to be a little bit careful there. And he definitely looked like someone that had played his first game 3 or 4 days ago for about a month, didn't he? Looked a little bit leggy to me. He didn't look like he was quite the same energy from
James. I thought there was a few of them that looked like it, to be fair.
I agree.
And again, that's, me and Neil, we spoke about it, didn't we, on WhatsApp, where we just said, I think we need to get smarter in telling managers that, like, hang on, you're not playing them in both games for like 84 or 90 minutes each and manage it better. But you know what will happen is that it will be Arsenal with the bad guys because they're depriving these players from playing for their country. You know, it was so funny, wasn't it, that, you know, Rodri's not playing this second Spain game. He's got an injury. Ake's got an injury. Haaland's got an injury. You know, as much as Haaland got the plaudits for scoring his goal yesterday, from when I was watching it, Jack, Ake's, the number that Ake did on Salah, especially that first half, he was their best player.
Yeah.
Him and Doku, even though people said that Doku was a bit wasteful, them two were fantastic. And I'm like, they didn't. I think they only played one game each. I think they played one, but they didn't play the second one.
Right.
And, yeah, and they were, all of a sudden they were fit for the weekend as well.
Yeah. You know, the problem is when we say that they want to internally investigate every minor stub toe. But when other clubs do it, it's like, oh no, absolutely, yeah, getting better. Then they suddenly see him. Not a word's been said about Pep. I was actually I didn't really care who won Man City or Liverpool, but when Liverpool scored against the run of play, I was like, well, that serves you right, because you've literally pulled out, Edison got pulled out in the 96th minute against Chelsea, absolutely fine. Haaland halfway through Norway's game, Rodri fatigue for Spain. He played 70 games for Man City last season, not once fatigue was mentioned, but you got to play Spain against Faroe Islands and he's got fatigue. It's what I mean, and you're right that nothing gets said because it's Pep Guardiola, but old young Mikel Arteta, obviously we can't say a word apparently in his internal investigation against it. Klopp does the same thing too, right? Klopp does it. I mean, he's pulled out Trent Alexander-Arnold from so many England camps and he's never been injured for half of them and nobody says a word. But if we do it once, it's all over the place. It's incredible the way different managers are judged. But I think on the potency thing, the only thing I'd add to it, which I agree with all your points really, is the only difference is the left eight, and that we have got a little bit of a problem there, because at the left eight, our best player this season has been Declan Rice, but he's also our best player at the six, and you can't play him in both. And the problem there is if Kai Havertz, which we'll get to, who had a very good cameo, doesn't fill the left eight role confidently, at least to the level of Granit Xhaka, we're then in a dilemma of, well, how do we correct that position? The obvious is to play Declan Rice there, but if, you know, the likes of Thomas Partey are never fit, then you wonder whether it is what the strongest you could be, you know. With all due respect to Jorginho, I think he's great for certain games, but not for every game. So it's a little bit difficult because there's a lot of players that you can play there. Trossard, I didn't think he was bad necessarily in the left eight, but you definitely see the lack of sort of physical dominance and energy and legs we have from that position. When, you know, in transition, I felt we were a bit more vulnerable. I didn't think it was down to Trossard necessarily, but the collective sort of made a cup of that midfield with Trossard and Odegaard, maybe possibly, right?
So I think it's difficult because there's a lot of options there, but we're not seeing the option at the moment, like for every game. And that's, I would say that's a little bit of a worry, and it doesn't help our attacking fluency, but we'll get onto that. But key moments in the game, we've got to talk about Aaron Ramsdale. I mean, we can't avoid talking about Aaron Ramsdale, right? Lots of talk about him in the week, Neil. We knew he was going to start this game. I know people said it after that. Midweek interview, Cole Hyam was going to start. I was like, okay, stop. You know, he's not going to start Cole Hyam. He's definitely going to start Aaron Ramsdale. But Neil, we've moaned and worried a little bit about, you know, David Raya early on in games looking a bit tetchy. So we can't act like you know, David Raya was being immune to these kind of moments. But it definitely looked like Aaron Ramsdale was feeling the pressure, a little bit nervous. Couple of really big errors that could have cost us in that first half, Neil, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it didn't help the away fans giving him stick right from the get-go. But he's not, just looking at his body language, just looking at him, he's not the same character. I'll give you one example which really hit hard on me. Do you remember when he first came and we were getting those crazy wins? Last Garps wins, they would pan over to him, the camera, and he would be going absolutely mental. So, you know, he would be absolutely, you know, and that's why I fell in love with him. I was like, look at this guy. How much does he love this club, everything about it. And when we got the win, we got the goal, Kai Havertz scored, and they panned, he was like a shadow of that person. And I think it's just, you guys have been saying it for a while, I was holding on to hope, because I love the guy. I really do. I've got a lot of time for him. Yes, he's not, you know, there's mistakes in him and whatnot, but I've just felt that he was such an integral part and a component to our transition and, you know, getting us to a stage where now we are a team which is competing for titles. We are a team which is back in the Champions League. And I thought he had a lot to do with that. And it's just, I feel so bad for him. You know, just talking about that side of it rather than his actual footballing abilities. But I thought he was very, very, he just was nervous. I think the pressure told, James put it on the WhatsApp, doesn't have the minerals for this, you know. Yeah, I mean, I can't fault the player for every part of that, because at the end of the day, he's been put out in the cold. And look, I'm not saying it's a mistake. I'm not having a go at Arteta. I'm not having a go at Raya. I think we've got a great keeper in Raya. He's only going to get better as far as I'm concerned. But I just feel that it's just so unfortunate for Ramsdale to come into a situation and have this thing going on, this situation going on with the footballing goalkeepers at our club. You know, two number ones, it's not worked. I thought it might. I thought we could break the mold and it could work. It's not working. And I think it's having a detrimental effect on Ramsdale for sure. He looks so nervous. He looks so edgy. Look at those two errors. That one where, you know, he got lucky because Rice was there to you know, great goal line clearance.
Rice, wasn't it?
Just his awareness that he knew exactly. I mean, he was watching it. I just watched him on the replay, and I looked at his body language. I looked at his face, and it's almost like he knew that I've got to get back there immediately. That's where the strike, the guy's going to, I think it was, not Wiz, the other one.
Mremo.
I thought he just knew he was going to shoot it near that area. What a great bit of improvisation to save his goalkeeper. But even after that, he made another error where he kind of, I don't know what he did. It was not even a throw, was it? It was weird. It's like, he almost punched the ball into the ground.
Kind of indecision, wasn't it? Both of the instances.
Exactly. Not the keeper that I came to know when he first joined the club. He was full of enthusiasm, smiling all the time. Bure having the banter with the away fans. He looked so withdrawn, and even in a weird way, he looked even smaller in his shirt. He just looked different. He didn't look this imposing character. And for me, that says he's gone. Whether that be in January, or certainly be in the summer. So it's a difficult one to come in. However, having said all that and all the mistakes that I'm sure you two are going to talk about, I thought the second half performance was better. There was that one piece where he actually came out, and it was a good decision to stop. There was a ball that I don't know whether it was aerially or not. I can't remember. I only watched the game once.
He came out, kind of sweeper keeper kind of part.
Yeah.
I remember.
And I thought that was a really good, strong decision. And that's the kind of Ramsdale I remember that we had, more assured, more confident. And look, at the end of the day, no matter what happened, Zinchenko as well, I thought his goal line glutes even better than Rice's, and that's saying something. But because of those two, we've managed to keep a clean sheet. But at least whatever happens, he will take away a clean sheet from this from this game, which I'm really pleased for him. But no, as far as his future is concerned, no, I think that's it. And of course, he didn't help with... I don't want to talk about that too much because I think it was wrong to give him a platform for what his dad did. And he didn't help himself making that comment about, oh, I'm not alert for the 90 minutes of the game. You do not say that, even if other keepers don't do it. You just do not say that. You do not go, it's like me saying about my job. Oh, yeah, only like 7 hours a day working or 8 hours. I'm only like concentrating to four of them. You don't say it, do you? That's your job. So that I think he was a bit silly of him, but we can talk about his dad or whatever, but yeah, he's gone for me. And it saddens me to say it.
James, do you think it could be his last game at a club, possibly? I mean, there's a chance, right? I mean, dependent on, maybe not, FA Cup third round, seems like David Raya, you know, anything could happen to him. What were your thoughts? I felt it just reeked of indecision from the, and I think what will frustrate Arteta the most is, or what will justify his decision the most, is what I felt when I was watching the game was, for example, Raya's mistakes. His is usually when he makes the wrong pass, but in these both instances, he just didn't make them. He just sat on it and then, you know, just fell on it. Almost like it's the indecision. And then how you react to the indecision. Raya makes the wrong pass, but what I used to see after Raya doing it, which he's done multiple times, is he almost tries to continue doing it. Right, you saw after the Mudryk cross, he started to do the same passes. That's what almost cost him the Cole Palmer incident, where we could have gone 3-0 down. But he has that sort of inner belief almost that he's, I'm going to keep doing what the coach has asked me to do. But we started pumping balls long after that Rice one, didn't we? Pumping balls long. And I guess my worry, James, and I don't know what your thoughts are, is does this hurt? Because he's going to be sold. I think there's a real strong chance now. I think he knows, we know, we all know. So the sell-on value, we're so bad. This is a goalkeeper that was valued as one of the highest, value goalkeepers 6 months ago. And now I'm thinking in my head, I bet you if we get rid of him, it'll be a loan with a purchase. Like, we've got to be better at not crushing the value of players. You know, we've got to do, I don't know how, but we've got to do better at doing that. We've got to show more support to them. To be honest, if we were trying to sell Eddie at the moment, I would say that's the perfect way you do it. You include him, you keep playing him, he's scoring goals still. He still looks valuable to me anyway. But we seem to do this too much. If someone told me we've crushed his value over the last two games that he's played, I'd be like, yeah, maybe we have. But James, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. We do tank the value of, let's remember this is a guy that was he was in the PFA team of the year. So remember, that's voted for by the players. So the players in the league thought that of all the other, there's Alisson, there's Edison, they thought he was the best goalkeeper that they come up against last season. And he was voted as the eighth best goalkeeper in the world in the, Yashin Trophy, whatever you want to call it, for the Ballon d'Or and everything else like that, for the FIFA team of the year. So I got carried away thinking, oh, he's a 60 million plus goalkeeper, isn't he? But like you said, the way he's playing, and again, the way the situation is going, I agree with you. I don't think that interview did help things. I think it made things worse, personally. And I do believe, like you said, now if we get what we paid for him back, which is about 35 to 40, I think that's the best we're going to get because of this situation. And yeah, I do agree with you. It's just indecision. And I don't know if that's because of the situation. He's thinking more because he's like, oh, well, if I go to this one and it, and I did see something where it said, don't blame him, blame the situation that he's been put in. But at the same time, again, I'm with Neil. You got to be better than that. This is a guy that we've seen before thrived in volatile situations. You know, we went away last season. Someone jumped over the barrier and tried to punt. You know, they whacked him. Not as bad as it could have been, but yeah, they did. You know, they did. You know, they assaulted the guy. He got charged for it. Got put away for it. So he knows. That's the thing. And like Neil said again, that's the thing that upsets me the most. Is even though this is all going on around you, show out. And he didn't show out for me. There was nothing in that performance yesterday, even though he got a clean sheet, that made me think Ray is bricking it about you playing. He just sat there, you know, he come out at half time, wasn't it, Ray? And he was having, you know, half his grenade. Bloody chocolate. He was so relaxed. You know, there was bits of it where he was sitting with the Brentford people in their jackets, and then he was with the Arsenal ones in there. He was just flicking between the two, like, sort of seats of where he wanted to sit and everything. And he just looked composed, and because he's like, no fret. And that to me, and I want that from every person on the pitch, not just the goalkeepers. You know, how many times have we said, oh, you know, he's let these fringe players have a chance and they've wasted it? Well, you know, again, sadly at the moment, Aaron Ramsdale is a fringe player. And like I put in the chat about the minerals, I don't think he can cope with being a fringe player. So I do believe he's going to go. It's just, what are we going to get for him, and when will it happen? You're more likely to get it done in the summer, but I do believe that he will want that done in January because of, like we said, that Instagram post with the England thing. I think that's another one from his team to push, you know, oh, look, England means so much to me, even though he's never been England's first choice goalkeeper.
Some people say he's okay. Second choice now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, okay, he got the Scotland game. But even then, people were going, boy, he's not as good as Pickford. And I was like, well, wow, okay, if people are saying he's not better than Pickford, there really is a problem going on here. So, but yeah, I think that the narrative and the performance indicate that he's unhappy and he's probably going to end up going. And if he does go, I will be slightly sad about it because of how important he was last season. And I think at the end, at the final whistle, I don't know if you guys agree with me. I thought he was going to break down in tears.
It looked like he was crushed by the performance.
But I mean, I don't know if it was all the players going around him, and because he's, you know, where there was the report that a lot of them were quite angry at how quick Arteta just. And put Raya straight in because of how influential he is in that dressing room. And you could see it from them there. They were ecstatic, I think, that he did get a clean sheet, regardless of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was not overly impressed. And I don't like to make this a Raya versus Ramsdale thing, Jack, because I agree with what we've always talked about, and I've seen other podcasts talk about it. There's so much externally from media, from opposition fans, from everybody about Arsenal. You know, it's always, Micah Richards summed it up last season. He said, there's always a pile on with Arsenal and I don't understand why. And I was so happy when he did that. I was like, finally, there is one, seems to be one pundit out there that isn't, you know, hasn't really got an Arsenal tie other than, you know, that he supported Arsenal as a kid. He's openly admitted that. Same as Daniel Sturridge, he's openly admitted it as well. But when we're internally and our own fans and everything creating these kinds of situations, it's not conducive for a team that wants to be at the top and wants to be at the pinnacle. And yeah, did the manager create that situation? Yes, he did. But there were so many fans that were like, no, this is ridiculous. You know, it was almost like David Raya, you know, can't get the love or the support because he's displayed. And I'm like, well, hang on a sec. You're these people that vehemently defend everything that Mikel Arteta, that, you know, if Mikel Arteta run over one of their kids on a zebra crossing, they'll still love him. It just because everything Mikel Arteta does is fantastic. So it's like, well, you know, you can critique, you're saying how much you don't like David Raya. I'm like, but your manager that you're lauding and everything else like that for everything he does, he's made that decision. So why is it, you know, you're blaming Raya for it? It just doesn't make sense.
It's been driven a lot by the English fans and English media. I think there's, you know, if it was an English goalkeeper, I don't think it would really exist, to be honest. And if it was an Arsenal, I don't think it would really exist. But I do think maybe the only positive that comes out of this as a club is these two performances might lessen some of that media drive of the constant debate. Because I think when you're watching this, it becomes really obvious, even to the likes of Neville and Carragher. They're like, well, it's pretty clear who's the number one now. You know what I mean? Like, we might have to stop asking silly questions about this now because it's pretty clear.
Well, all I saw yesterday was them being like, you know, yeah, this is the situation that he created because it's his arrogance thinking that he can,
The problem with that I have is competition exists all over the place, right? It exists all over the place. And if you can't handle that as a player, I know goalkeepers are a little bit different, but you've got to be able to handle that and rise against that. That's what you get paid for. You know, that's, you know, you've got to be able to, and you know, you don't know if you can get that position back. But I try to liken it to, like, Leno came in for a game, didn't he? Against Villa away. When Ramsdale, and he had a fantastic game, and I remember really being quite critical of Leno, and then when he had that game, I went, do you know what, that was really professional of Leno. I thought he was fantastic. It was a very similar game to this one, actually. He had a lot to deal with, a lot of crosses and things like, and he was hand perfect or foot perfect. He was really good, and I thought, fair play to you. You were very professional there. And to be fair to Leno, he said a few things since he's left, but during the time he was here, he was mute. He didn't say a word through anybody. I remember it because I was like, in fairness, he's probably feeling pretty aggrieved right now. And, you know, because the World Cup was coming up, I think, and he was in the Germany squad. A similar situation, wasn't number one, but was number two or three. And it was hurting him. And it went all the way through to the summer, didn't it? And he didn't say a word. And we're seeing a lot different from Ramsdale's side of things. And I don't think, you know, maybe it helps in January, but like you said, it's probably something we look at, because we still need someone to play the Brentford home game at the very least. At the very least, we still need someone to play the Brentford home game, right? At the very, very least. It cannot be David Raya for that. So it's not like you can, you know, sell Ramsdale, replace him with a Runnison and think, oh, I'm not going to play him. You know, you've got to replace him half decent. So then, you know, there's a lot of things up in the air. So I'm not convinced absolutely on the January thing. But yeah, it wasn't a performance that's going to convince many, I don't think. Arteta's, you know, his comments afterwards were interesting. And at the same time, he said courage, and he showed great courage in the second half. But on other he swerved it a lot, almost like the team collectively defended well. I don't want to talk about a goalkeeper, kind of like that a little bit. And, you know, maybe he's just fed up with the conversation, which would be understandable. But I do think that maybe there's, you know, some deeper frustration there. And I think his deeper frustration would probably lie in the fact that the reaction to the mistake rather than the mistake itself. I think when he starts to see his goalkeeper getting 50% pass accuracy and pumping it long from the 10th minute onwards, when, you know, we you know, Saliba usually has about 100 touches in a game, 80 to 100. He had 50 in this game because we didn't build from the back. Why didn't we build from the back? Because every time the ball went back to Ramsdale, we pumped it long again. And that's why, you know, we weren't really getting Jesus on the ball because he's trying to win the ball against 6'5" centre backs. It was a bit odd, you know, bring Havertz on at that point, basically, which we did eventually. The disallowed goal, we did briefly touch on it, but I think the biggest issue there was the Jesus. Brilliant ball by Saka. But I don't want to go into VAR too much because, you know, if it's offside, it's offside. But I don't trust the lines anymore after everything that's gone on with the Tottenham-Liverpool game. I think we used to before that. We were like, oh, this is pretty objective. We're now starting to realise it's not really objective because they're being drawn at a very weird angle to start with. But, you know, I just find it very interesting that from the exactly same angle that Jollington's was, they seem to find, you know, the line very quickly. You know, Arsenal, Newcastle, they go, do you know what, guys, I don't think we see that. We're all, just carry on. I don't think we can count that one. So they just find it very quickly when it's in, you know, going against us. But biggest issue I had with that, looking back at it, was Jesus's header. He's on like 10 yards out, no one's near him, and he's headed it straight at the goalkeeper. The ball's not too high for him. It's not too low for him. He just has put it either side, and it's a goal.
that's a poor header from a striker, in fairness. And that was what annoyed me the most in the end, because it got ruled out. And we all know a touch and go one for Arsenal at the moment's getting ruled out, don't we? So that was pretty frustrating, because it would have been perfect time when it right on the edge of half time. Didn't change too much.
Can I just say quick, Jack, as well? I thought the way that Mikel handled that showed that he's learning that, because I'm like, normally he would go mental there, but he was very much just sort of like, you could see by his face, because they did pan to him right away, and he was like, I'm holding it in because I've got a charge looming. If I go bolting up, you know, running to the fourth official or whatever, I'm gonna create more of a situation here. So I don't know if that's either him learning himself, or, you know, old Stuyvenberg or someone's just gone to him like, mate, let's, you know,
you've already got one bang coming.
The old spiral tap. Oh, it's at 11. It's like, yeah, get it to about an 8 or a 7, please. You know, what, wind it down.
That's a great scene, that. These are all at 11. Brilliant movie. I would have been frustrated if I was Arteta, to be fair. But you're right, he handled it pretty well. And I think, you know, he probably thought that one was coming to me, because I know what's going on here. We're not other clubs that seem to get this, you know, when you look at the Liverpool one and the Alisson one, it's just unbelievable that John Linton's one didn't give him a foul. And I know I've said that to Liverpool fans. They're like, oh, but that always gets given for a goalkeeper. And I went, oh, I'm sorry. I don't even know if he's pulled him, his arm's up, but I don't even know if he's put anything on him. That's very lucky. It's very soft. And in comparison to Rouse, it was unbelievably soft, goalkeeper or not, you know. But yeah, frustrated. I was so frustrated at that goal not being given, because I felt we weren't creating very much. And I also know how important it is against low blocks to get that early goal. And that meant we didn't have it. And at that point, it became a very sort of split game a little bit. Still us dominating territory, Neil, but us not really creating a ton once again. And we had a few touchy moments at the back end. Zinny was unbelievable, like James said. But how would you felt if... It was Neil Maupay that went up for that header that Zinny blocked unbelievably. He knew he made an error, didn't he, Zinchenko? And he was like, I'm not going to cost us. And in fact, I have to say, Zinchenko has improved big time defensively this season. I don't think he's been given enough credit for how much he's improved defensively. And he's really good in the air as well. He wins some amazing aerial balls from long balls from them he was winning. But Neil, that would have been a horrible one. He's a horrible player, probably top three in the league for horrible, right alongside Anthony and Bruno Fernandes, and you know the list. But that would have been horrible. I think he missed the follow-up as well, didn't he, Maupay? He put it wide, didn't he? So it was a double whammy from him. And at that moment, Neil, I took my breath and I thought, oh gosh, if we can get something here and nick it, maybe there's a sign, you know. But we did, we rode our luck in that moment a little bit, Neil.
Yeah, we did. Like the first one with Declan Rice saving it, we did ride our luck a bit. You know, I remember Arteta just very quickly, just talking about the same thing, but a little bit of a swerve from the question. He was interviewed by Jonathan Pearce, and Jonathan Pearce said, not the greatest of games, not the prettiest. And, you know, what are your thoughts on the players not playing the best game? And he said, what are you talking about? We were brilliant. He goes, how many teams come to Brentford and go away successful or play brilliant football? They set up in a way that stops you from playing the football, that the type of football that your team might be identified for playing. And we had to adjust. And what we did do was play brilliantly. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a great comment from Arteta. I love Jonathan Pearce, by the way, but I think that was a really good comeback by Arteta, and he's spot on. He goes, we played brilliantly in the way we had to play. You know, it's a different type of formation, different type of tactic, or whatever you want to call it, different strategy. Sorry, that's the word I was looking for, to play against Brentford. But having said that, those two goals, it's all about fine margins. What if they had gone in? That's two goals to them. And I'm not sure Arteta would have been saying the same thing. So we have ridden our luck. I don't think we can say for sure, for absolute certainty, that every single player played brilliantly. It worked out well as a defensive, feature of the game, how it all panned out in the end, and a clean sheet and whatnot. But we did ride our luck. I'm 100% with you on that. And I was like, okay, I'm with you, because when I saw that, and by the way, Zinchenko was incredible. I loved that from him, that he's made a mistake, because he's been found wanting a lot since he's joined us, where he's made an error and it's just like, you know, that's it. I've made a mistake and does nothing about it. But he seems to be different. And I think what you guys talked about earlier, that because Tomiyasu has come on so well, he's worried because, you know, it's only by virtue of the fact that I think White wasn't played that Zinchenko actually might have been in the team. Because I've got a feeling if White was playing, he would have had Tomiyo on the left. I'm pretty sure of it. Because Tomiyasu has been absolutely magnificent, I think, in recent times.
He was good again.
Could be wrong.
He was good again.
It was, exactly. No, I like that about Tomiyasu. We don't speak about him much, but he's doing, for me, he's almost like, I think even White is to a certain extent a little bit of an unsung hero. But I think Tomiyasu is almost like the Gilberto was for us in the Invincibles. Mm-hmm. Just quietly getting on with it, doing a good job, but we don't focus on or hone in on him too much. And I like it. Keep the tension away from him. He seems to be that kind of person anyways. But you know, I'm digressing. I think Zinchenko's had to up his game. And he's upped his game not only defensively, but he's doing what he did when he first joined in a creative sense. And he was, like the last game, I think he was responsible for so much of what was going on. There wasn't that much going on creativity or attacking wise, but he was responsible. He was in the heart of a lot of it. But defensively, yeah, absolutely brilliant. To realise I've made a mistake, I've got to try and make amends. And you can't make amends any better than the way he did. It's just ridiculous reaction to stop. And the determination and the strength of character to show that, no, you're not getting a goal against us. Yeah, you're not doing it. You've stopped us playing our game, but you're certainly not going to get us on a counter-attack or anything like that, or a mistake. We're going to stop you. And I think when I saw that, Jack, I had a feeling that we were going to win. I know it's easy to say now with hindsight because we did get the win. But I remember, I don't often call these kind of decisions on players and substitutions, but you have to say, sorry to go a bit forward, Arteta's substitutions have been absolutely brilliant. We've had, on par with Brighton, 10 substitutes have scored. We're top.
Really? That's a great stat. Yeah.
I said to you guys, don't hate me, but do you not think Kai Havertz would be an option late on in this sort of game? Because nothing really was happening. And look at the impact he made. He came on and you know, he made a difference. I think right from the start, he's made a difference. And I was saying right at the beginning of the season, he's going to be better as a sub, an impact sub, because this isn't working starting him. And I think, I'm not saying that's the formula forever, but it's a way to bed him in, to give him confidence. And again, I'm sorry, I'm going ahead of myself, but I just want to say that I think that the goal means more than 3 points to us, means more than, you know, a statement to us, and the fact that we're showing the whole league that this is what champions do, that they win dirty or kind of not easy on the eye games, difficult games, and get a result when they haven't played at their very best. But also for Kyle on a personal level, I think surely, we all thought that when he scored the penalty against Bournemouth that it might kickstart him. But I think because this is in open play, I think this is going to be a game changer for him. And I think things are going to really start kicking into gear for him. So, yeah, I think it's great stuff. But sorry, I think Zinchenko, he's now become another player that you can't drop, I think, on that performance, because he's giving it defensively as well as offensively. So we've got great options. Just, I'm saying that competition is so important. James, I'm with you. I thought that about Raya. I thought he looked very relaxed. He looked, you know, every time that he looked at him, you know, showed him just sitting there, just like looking there, maybe he was chewing something or eating something. But I don't want players to get too relaxed, because that's the problem. You don't want players to become complacent that they've got no challenge. I'm not saying Ramsdale is now the answer. All I'm saying is I don't want any of our players to be relaxed. They need to feel that their place is not a guarantee, because that, for me, might lower their performances.
We saw it, Neil. Look at Ramsdale's mistakes in the running, but he knew, I can play it out the back here against Southampton straight into their press. They can score a goal because Turner's on the bench and he's never going to play Turner ahead of me. So we've seen it, Neil. We've seen it. Yeah. And again, you're saying about Zinchenko as well. And again, I don't know if that was the arrival of Timber and the reemergence of Tomiyasu to the player that he was when we first signed him. But just one thing I will indicate that shows me the improvement that you've just spoken about, Jack spoken about, I spoke about earlier. He vacates his left space to come to the right to block that from Mope. Now, normally he would never leave that left channel completely empty in a defensive situation like that. Yes, he vacates it to go in the middle when we're on offense. So that to me shows the commitment to getting better at being a defender, because he's like, I've left that channel to come back across to block that. So that just shows the awareness. I mean, we all talk about his brain anyway, but that shows his brain in a defensive aspect, because he's gone, oh, I'm going to vacate my side. You know, that is so dangerous to leave one side of the pitch completely empty, but I buggered up there to create this situation. So I'm going all out to come across to stop it. And yeah, it was brilliant from him.
In fairness, there was an argument a lot last season, not between us, but just generally with Arsenal fans, about Tierney being this far superior defensive left back than Zinchenko. And I wasn't having any of it. I said, I don't think either of them are perfect defensively, to be honest. I think they've both got weaknesses, and I don't see the massive difference. And that's why he was bringing on Tierney so late. So, like, we were away at Anfield and getting pummeled in the second half, but he refused to bring Tierney on until the 88th minute. That's because he knew deep down that it wasn't about defensive, it was just about his legs. Like, how long can Zinchenko last? But it's not actually, it wasn't a Tomiyasu we're bringing on, who's clearly the best fullback we've got defensively. There wasn't a lot in it defensively between Zinchenko and Tierney for me, which is why Zinchenko just ended up playing all those minutes, because, you know, going forward, there was a huge difference. But yeah, just going back to Kai Havertz, I mean, he comes on for Martinelli, and I can't help but watch this game. And it's hard to tell in a late broken up play game where, because when you make so many subs, Eddie's coming on, Jorginho's coming on, Kai Havertz come, and you start to, is everyone in their same position? But to me, the goal indicated more so, but the positions he took up, is that really Kai Havertz was taking up a second striker position really again, which is again, always same against Man City at home, same against the Charity Shield. This is when he's put in his best performances, and I can't help but watch it and think, do you know what? He is a perfect alternative nine option when Jesus isn't working, because when he isn't working, we bring Eddie on. It's not a change to anything. If low blocks, it doesn't change anything. But as soon as Havertz comes on, we start whipping in balls and whipping them into someone. There's a target. He can post up. He can stand up. He looks more comfortable to me in those positions. Maybe the left eight works out. Maybe it does. But I don't see it imminently happening. Whereas this looks like a viable current option to me. He might not love it, but if he keeps getting goals every other week from the bench, I bet you he'll start to love it. So it won't really matter. But he does brilliantly. I mean, it's all about the ball, really, from Saka. But it really is. It reminded me of Slavia Prague away last season or season before. No, two or three seasons ago now. There was you had to score to win it, second leg. Last minute, whipped it in, Aubameyang header, back post, and Aubameyang couldn't head the ball, so it must have been a great ball. And it was exactly the same. Bukayo Saka just has
reminded me of the cup fight. Sorry, the... it was the final, wasn't it, where Pepe slipped that one in and Aubameyang went across, didn't he? Or was it the Man City game that he did
that was City semi-final, was it, when it hit the post from Aubameyang?
That space, get that ball in that space, it's a brilliant area. And like I put in the chat, I mean, I'm used to, you know, the Alan Shearers where it's like, bang, have that, you know, if you're going to do a head. But it was like he sort of, like I said, he P-rolled it. It was like a snooker shot, just like he kissed the right angle of the ball and everything. And I was just like, oh, my God, like, wow. And then I felt, you know, man at the bottom of my screen, vilified for saying, I think Kai Havertz is going to be a good option here. I was like, well, there he is. You know, and just a big 3 points. And again, like we mentioned, it's a huge goal for that player. And I do hope he kicks on. I know people have been saying to me, oh, come on, some of the stuff you've been, and I'm like, look, I've got to say it as I see it. You know, the way I've watched him play, you know, I've mentioned it before. It's like he's in Timberlands instead of football boots. Just everything's heavy. He looks so void in it. But yeah, he was over them. I mean, there is a bit of me that does think he's a bit shy and reserved because Arteta was basically dragging him money in that headline. Yeah, I'm like, he don't, you know, even his interview after was very much like, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm really pleased, but can I go now? Like, I don't really, yeah, want, I don't really it, like, yeah, I don't like doing yeah. this. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I really hope he kicks on. And that was what he did, you know. Okay, he wasn't fantastic at Chelsea, but one thing, he got on big, he delivered big time in big moments. And if you look at it, he got the assist for Martinelli for us to beat City, and he got us, you know, which got us 3 points. Yeah. And he got us another big 3 points when we needed it, because both those games, if you look at it on balance, you thought that they were both going to be 1 points instead of three. So he's arguably got us 6 big points there that have contributed to us being top. And as much as I've slated him and said what I've said, he has contributed 6 points there instead of two. You know, he's won. He's got us 2 big wins. So yeah. Fair play. And yeah, I want to see. Hopefully he pushes on. That's what I want to see.
I'll play him in the 9 against Lons on Wednesday. I really would. It's not maybe the type of game I'd play him in, the 9, but if you're looking to rotate Jesus out, I'd rather see him there than Eddie in a way. I'd like to see
No, I agree with you.
You know what I mean? I'd like to see it. I just think that the best performances we've seen from him have been when he's been pushed up higher. And maybe he wants that from the 8 position, but it's not really working like that at the moment. That's not the way he has to work in the 8. He has to do a lot of defensive duties. He doesn't seem quite as comfortable making those runs into the box consistently. For me, I'd try him in the 9, because if you do and it works out and it works as an alternative option, you may free yourself up with other options in terms of, you know, who do you need? Because Trossard's already proven himself a pretty good 9 option as well. So how many can you have there? All that kind of stuff, you know. But like you said, unbelievable 3 points. Just fantastic. You know, leaves us top of the league. City, obviously, you know, we know what they're like. We know how good they are in the second half of the season. I thought, like you, I watched a bit of the game back with City. I thought they were by far the better side against Liverpool, to be honest. But Liverpool got a great point. I mean, not many teams go and get a point at City. They beat, by the way, Brentford beat, they did the double over City last season, I want to say, didn't they? They did the double over City last season. They beat them home and away. Treble winners. They beat home and away last season, I believe. So they're no mugs, are they? They're no mugs, and they're very, very difficult at home. Like, I went into watching this game thinking we've got to win, and anything less is going to be disappointing. But that's the level we've come to now, you know, and it definitely
it's like I mentioned to you earlier, you know, and Neil said about Arteta went, no, we were brilliant in how we played against what we played against. And Thomas Frank was saying, you know, if I go football for football against Arsenal, he went, that's suicidal. So yeah, I've sacrificed a bit of the usual game to suit the opponent. You know, I've always said it, that, you know, that your style, you got to pick your style in your fights and everything else like that. And yeah, I thought that they did extremely, extremely well, Brentford. And they are tough to beat. Even, I think the adjustment that he's shown without Ivan Toney, they've done so, so well. I mean, at the start of the season, and Bueno was, I think he was he was top of the scoring charts for a little while, because they just flew out the blocks right away.
Yeah.
So it is a big 3 points, I think.
Yeah.
Because they're a good side. In terms of that sort of mid-table block of teams that you've got, they're a very, very tricky one to beat.
Yeah, massively, massively. Yeah, it's a game. You may not remember the game. Maybe you will, for the reasons that you said, like Kai Havertz starting point moment and things like that. But in terms of the details of the game, I don't think, you know, in a year's time, I don't think we're remembering much about it other than the result. Which is fine. You can't win every game in beautiful style and beautiful fashion. But you know, if you're gonna go and win something, you like Neil said, you've got to get 3 points in games like this. And it was brilliant that we did. I was absolutely delighted. We've got Lons in midweek on Wednesday, and then Saturday 3 PM we've got Wolves, who are a good side. Wolves are a good side. They definitely play some attacking football. They've got some really good players. I think Wolves, that people underrated maybe the start of the season because they were having some tricky results. But I presume, let's get your predictions. I presume in midweek we'll see 3 or 4 changes just naturally. The likes of Raya, White, Jorginho, Havertz will probably come into the starting lineup. So I don't think there's too much need to talk about the lineup. I expect us to go pretty strong still because we need to win that game. If we win that game, it allows us to go truly rotational in the final game because it really doesn't matter. If you go partially in this and it costs you, you then don't get the option of that final game. So I know people might be thinking, oh, you know, rotating midweek, you know, I personally would go pretty strong in midweek because, if it goes well for you, you can always pull them off early. You know what I mean? So that would be my way of going on it. But what's your predictions, Neil? We're going Lons on Wednesday and then Wolves at home on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of the lineup. It's got to be strong because we need to get this one done, dusted. We need to kind of get a bit of revenge because they done us, didn't they? So we want to show them that, all right, yeah, you've got us at your ground, but we're going to sort you out in ours. Keep that fortress mentality. I think we're going strong. And I agree that the change is going to be rare. I think White will come back in. Hopefully he'll have a good relationship with Saka. We'll see some of those overlaps, those potent overlaps and a little bit more free-flowing football. I think it'll be a nice game, actually. I've got this feeling it'll be a nice game. As long as they're a good team. So good game to watch. I think we're going to just get our revenge on them. I think we'll beat them. It will be a comfortable 2-0 for me. Comfortable 2-0, and we'll secure our place, and then we can do that rotation for the rest of the competition that you mentioned. And I think Martinelli's going to score against Lons. So 2-0 Martinelli and Wolves, if you want prediction. I'm hoping to be back at games. I'm hoping to go to that. I was supposed to go to the Lons one as well, but I can't risk it. With the back, the way my back is, so hoping to be there at Wolves, so hopefully I can cheer them on a little bit. I think Wolves is always a tricky one. You never know what quite you're going to get with Wolves, but I think on the back of this Brentford win, I think we should be buoyant. I think we'll do them as well. I think I'm going to go for another 2-0. I think it's going to be 2-0s. And I'll swap it. I'll go Saka for that one. So Martinelli, midweek, Saka, weekend.
Take that all day. James, what about you?
Yeah, I think we're going to do reverse of what they did to us in the first game. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 win. And I'm going to say Trossard will score for us in that one. I don't know if that'll be off the bench or if he might start him again. But yeah, I'm going to pick Trossard for that. And then Wolves at home, I'm going to go for a 3-0 win. And I will pick... Who could do with getting a goal? Martin Odegaard. I'll go 3-0 Martin Odegaard.
I take that 3-0 Martin Odegaard. Yeah, Wolves, I think they're one of the sort of... Yeah, a bit like Brentford, but one very dangerous side, I think. And Gary O'Neill's got them really well drilled. And they're quite a high scoring side as well, aren't they? 16. They've scored 16. But yeah, they're quite a good side. But I'll go... I'm trying to make sure I don't pick... So I'll go 3-1 midweek. I'll go 3-1 Odegaard. And I'll go... 2-1 against Wolves. I'll say 2-1 Arsenal against Wolves, and I'll go Jesus for that one. So yeah, wait, I'll take all of our results there, any one of them. But boys, we're top of the league. Enjoy the games today with a relaxed hat on, you know, as a weekend should be after an Arsenal win. It's nice in a way, you know, to play the early game sometimes and you get to enjoy your Sunday games. But we'll on at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter.
Jack, sorry, can I say one thing before you do your... I'm just going back a little bit to the beginning of the podcast where you talked about, mentioned James or yourself about how we are, you know, losing Saliba and we're considered a one-man team. Let's not forget in recent years, because it angers me, all this thing that we get, the media that we have to contend with, whether it's to do with, you know, players going on international duty, we're not getting the support and all the decisions and the VAR. And for me, I use the word corruption. I'm sorry, I'm going to be corruption now. It's not bias anymore. I'm gone the other way. I'm so angry with it all. One-man teams, well, sorry, Liverpool, Van Dijk. If they lost Van Dijk, they would not have done what they did. Van Persie for Man United, when stupidly sold them to Ferguson, Van Persie won the league. There have been good teams or great teams which have heavily relied on one person. It doesn't make them a one-man team, but that one person makes a massive difference in the whole balance of the rest of the team. So, yes, we did falter a lot when Saliba got injured, but he got injured with Tomiyasu. Don't forget that, both of them together. So I just get angry with this. And sorry, I should have said it earlier, but it's just pending up in me and I had to release. So apologies. I'll let you carry on now. Sorry about that.
And Tomiyasu was really the backup for Saliba that no one talks about, because he would have gone a right back, White would have gone a centre back, whatever, but they would, that double whammy really pushed us down to our third tier, really. And imagine City doing that centre mid with Rodri. I mean, you don't even know the name of their third tier player. So, you know, do you know what I mean? So it's just, that's the level we had to go to and still try to chase the title against financial dopers. So it's just, yeah, very difficult. But now you're spot on. Sorry, at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter, Purely Arsenal on YouTube. Subscribe to us there. Give us a you know, a thumbs up, all that good stuff, and you'll get the podcast a little bit earlier. Subscribe for free, and we'll be back next week, hopefully, fingers crossed, after two wins and staying top of the league. Let's keep our hopes up, keep positive. Up the Arsenal, boys. Thank you so much. I don't even know how to stop the recording now. I've tried. What am I doing? I don't even know. Keep it going, Anthony. We're top of the league.